population growth would slow down in the way in which it slowed down in the Western world. See, what has happened in the past is that as people became, as countries became wealthier, and as infant mortality rates dropped, and the decline in infant mortality is certainly a function of the affluence of the country, the birth rate just sort of dropped, I don't like to say on its own, everything happens for a reason, but it went down without any preaching or extraordinary draconian measures. This is a well-known phenomenon. Well, now, the representatives of the Latin American countries were saying, let's stimulate economic growth and let this take care of itself. If we successfully promote growth, then the birth rate will slow down. There was one dissent from that second report, and that was by the U.S. representative. I call this to your attention because there is very clearly a conflict of interest here on the population problem between the people in the United States who are talking about what must be done in the underdeveloped countries and the people in those underdeveloped countries themselves. Another problem.
What are the names of these? Have you got the names?
I got them back up at the chalet. It's a report that the CED, I think, it was published in 68. They have, these reports always have names like dealing with the population problem, or I'll check it for you. The question of techniques always arises. It's kind of interesting to me, but 5 years ago I was at a conference in Notre Dame where they were talking about population, and the whole focus was on how do you do it, and which techniques are natural. And golly, how that has shifted, I feel very sorry for some Roman Catholic priests who 3 or 4 years ago thought they were holding the line at contraceptives, or hoped they were, and now find that the battle line has shifted to abortion. It's really amazing. 5 or 6 years ago, you could show in a movie, say, a woman getting an abortion, and this was a great tragic event. Assuming that it turned out well, that her health was not impaired in any way. And this was regarded regarded by most people as murder, I think 5 or 6 years ago. And obviously, it is not so regarded by most people today.
You
think it's obvious that it's not so regarded? I was assuming that the passage of new law.
There's a big division, and I'm concerned, and a lot of people are concerned, really concerned, and I think it's almost a condemnation of a civilization whose chief birth control method is abortion.
Well, all right, Leo, I happen to agree with you. But what I'm saying is there has certainly been a tremendous shift in public attitude.
I think that's really true, that it's been accepted more widely in the last decade. But one thing that I've noticed over the last 2 or 3 years is young people who may have already had recourse to abortion at one time in their college careers, when they get into trouble a second time, don't take that route. It's been an interesting change.
They don't?
There at least is some significant evidence that they've been turning against it, the idea of having the baby.
Well, all I'm saying now, I wasn't trying at this time to raise the abortion, but just point out that attitudes
and
thinking
shifted. I think we ought to have abortion on a separate session.
Yeah.
We can spend the rest of the week on abortion.
Right,
But maybe to put one note in here, Leo, and that is you showed the figure for Japan as being one, and abortion is a chief
factor. That's right. It is, no question about it. And also in Eastern Europe.
A related question, a question of institutions, is if we decide as a society that we want to reduce the birth rate, do we coerce people or do we allow them to be free? They say, well, how can a society reduce the birth rate and allow people to be free? Well, there are degrees of freedom. You could do, as some people have recommended, and I do not, you could do something like this, say, nobody may have more than 2 children. If you do, I was wondering what happens if you do.
I can think of something.
Another thing that you could do is increase the cost to people of having children. Now, actually, our society today subsidizes people rather heavily for the having of children. Federal income tax and, of course, the school system We provide education to everybody. You know, I don't pay more taxes because I have five children. Of course, the problem is if you say, well, everybody's going to have to pay for the schooling of his own children, and nobody gets an income tax deduction for children, are you penalizing the parents for having too many children, or are you penalizing the children for having parents who had too many children? You know, it's very tricky. And what do you do then with aged families with the dependent children? How does this all play in? So it's sticky. All I'm pointing out is that there are a lot of things that are sticky. On GNP, there are people who believe that the cause of all of our pollution is population. Other people who say, no, it isn't population, it's gross national product. The population of the United States wouldn't be creating any ecological problems for the world if it consumed at the rate at which the population of India consumes. But then there's another group, and I think I incline more toward this, that says that it isn't so much the GNP as the composition of the GNP. But anyway, this is very much debated. You can find people in all camps. In other words, you do have to be careful about calling for a decrease in the rate of economic growth, because some forms of economic growth will contribute to the solution of pollution problems. Other, for example, economic growth that takes the form of increase in the number of people doing research into the effects of all of these harmful oxides. I presume that would make our environment more habitable. There are all sorts of service activities in which I think we ought to be engaging more in the future. It's the kind of economic growth which we have seen in this century is very, very damaging. A growth that has moved us heavily in the direction of plasticizing our society, which has, I think, tremendously damaging ecological consequences. Then the last thing I wanted to comment on, and I don't know what's going to happen, is the Green Revolution, because this is often talked about now as, some people say, it's provided the solution. You all know what, you know, India last year exported grain. That's rather remarkable.
They're still starving. A lot of people, yeah. 35% of what food they have is eaten by vermin or other forms and spoils. But go ahead.
All right, but anyway, there's been a tremendous increase in the amount of grain that is produced. And the principal reason for this is something called the Green Revolution, the development of new hybrid seeds that produce tremendous crops. You can produce several crops in a year. But there are problems with this. These require the use of pesticides and irrigation, and require more, a different kind of organization of agriculture. You can't grow these things. You just got a little group of a lot of peasant farmers who are just running around tilling little strips here and there. It's very difficult for these farmers. It's unlikely that these farmers will employ these new hybrids, that they will obtain water for irrigation purposes, or that they will use the pesticides. Then if they do use the pesticides, what about all the problems that we've now begun to recognize, problems that arise through the use of pesticides? This came up in Stockholm County.
And fertilization.
Fertilization.
But the best prediction is, so maybe it'll stop for 30 years.
Yeah.
But then there are other issues that are consequences. Of course, the other thing about India, and a friend of mine made this proposal, it's called the Agro-Industrial Complex for the Indo-Gangetic Plain. And what he proposes is a series of multi-megawatt reactors, nuclear reactors, that are not only the power source, but also the pumping facilities, the fertilizer plant, and an industrial complex in the Indo-Gangetic Plain, so that you could then feed an additional, at least 250,000 people with the proposal. And in fact, the Indians are very interested in it, they're starting it now. And he feels the potential is greater than the Great Valley of California, which produces about 15 to 18% of the food of the nation at the present time. But there again, you're not talking about a long-term solution. But it is interesting.
Yeah, that also
India not... was going to go, some people feel, it has to make a quantum jump in energy storage.
Yeah. Right. You're also not talking about a short-run solution. That's good. So many of these solutions, you say, well, in the long run, that won't solve our problem. Moreover, in the short run, it won't solve our problem because we're going to have to do all sorts of things before we get there. And sometimes you get the impression that the period in which it will solve it is that moment when the short run ends just before the long run comes upon us. You ever have that feeling?
Well, one thing that I think that needs, and I don't know this much about it, but would need to be borne in mind, short-term solutions many times are possible, particularly from highly technological societies, by tremendous expenditure of energy, almost a wasteful use of it, and then a waste of resources. You know, you can get an effect rather rapidly. I'm thinking even about the Green Revolution, and here's where I don't know a thing, I'd like to ask you a question about it. Is it possible with these new kinds of strains of wheat and grain and so forth to increase protein value and so forth to millions of people? But what does that do to the soil? I mean, the earth is not being replaced very rapidly. I think that's one of the resources.
Yeah, that's why you have to increase the amount of commercial fertilizer, which is a limiting resource, perhaps. I mean, phosphorus could well be a limiting resource in the not-too-distant future. On these, it's true, one of the great, areas of advancement, perhaps, in the whole plant field, and some of you can address this better, but you see, what has happened is that they have developed strains of cereals that are more complete as a good protein source. Heretofore, they've been deficient in some of our critical amino acids in the protein. Now, we even have corn. There's been a corn developed that is high in what? High lysine or something, you know? Well, this is a real remarkable find. And then they thought, boy, this is really great for South America. We eat a lot of corn. But they don't like that kind of corn.
Well, how long does it take to put something like that into effect?
Well, it's been remarkable how fast it happened in India. You know, this is mainly Rockefeller money, and to an extent Ford. And there are two areas that really went here in quite a hurry, really. It isn't too many years ago that I recall that, you know, they developed these strains in Mexico on the wheat bed. And they took them to India on a trial basis. And of course, a lot of the Indians were volunteering to help take care of these gardens, and then they'd sneak a little of the seed. And but then they of course you go in a hurry on the seed week, you know. But you see what happened in India quite a few years ago is we said, boy, you need fertilizer plants, you know. So they went over and built all these fertilizer plants, and then the Indians put the fertilizer on their wheat. The wheat grew very rank, fell over, and you know it was a flop. So they closed the fertilizer plants, and you know, it was a disaster. Well, the new cereal crops, among other things, they're very short-stemmed. So you don't have this problem, and it's a high producer, and you could, you know, apply these fertilizers and get really a good result, you see. And I think it was just a matter of a few years. The same thing happened in rice. It was about Rockefeller money in the Philippines.
I think I need to be careful about the thing that we can achieve short-run solutions with a crash technological program. Sometimes we can, but very often we can't. It's been very discouraging to the technocrats of the world since the end of World War II to discover how many extraordinarily brilliant and well-equipped and well-financed technologists, engineers, and scientists can go into a country and have no impact.
Yeah, that's because of them. Complexity, I'm sure. I like to put in a discouraging note here too. It's something that came out and got quite involved with reading about Vietnam and the development of the war there. Before the increase of hostilities to a very high level, Vietnam was an exporter of rice. Now it's an importer, you know, many, many times in the minus. So that we can actually go backwards. The Mekong Delta was a rice bowl of Southeast Asia. It now, you know, is nothing.
So, well, it isn't nothing, but, you know, they're down, you know, they're fighting, and
Well, look, what do we, how about Al should say a few things, because I know he's been reflecting on the problem of how many people God wants, and I thought what we were going to do this morning, and to try to throw some of the questions in, I was trying to suggest what some of the problems are rather than the answers.
Yeah, I don't quite yet see what the principles are, or the principle is, on the basis of which we're making any judgment. What we've been talking about, as far as I can see, is the way in which the conditions of life, namely the availability of resources and the resulting, would also be a problem. That is to say, if the rest of the world increases and continues to increase in population, and we are a very smaller and smaller and smaller part of the world's population, the point of view of power seems to me very difficult to imagine that we're going to have much power in the world and as a nation. And I think it comes out of the black position, because as far as I can see, the position of the movement, that's a big broad term, about population control in any form is negative, that is, in the black movement, because it would reduce their potential for power. So that, and then you go back to the admonition to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. I don't see any way of getting any principle that's very adequate to limit population growth. I don't see any...
State that again, sir. But
I don't see any way to get a principle which limits population growth in the foreseeable future. Now I can see some reasons for maybe controlling it for the time being, or slowing it down, because rapid population growth multiplies your problems so rapidly that you can't keep up with them. But there's no principle that I can see which says that we ought to have zero population growth here or anywhere. I don't see any principle. I see some problems with rapid increase in population growth, sociological problems, problems in adjustment when everything is constant flux, and I'm kind of slowing down all changes in order to get more time, you know, to adjust to the changes.
Does that include change in lifestyle, slowing down change in lifestyle?
Well, slowing down population growth slowing down the movement of people to cities, there ought to be control of movement to cities. There ought to be control of movement within the city somehow, so you don't get such rapid destruction of lifestyles and of neighborhoods and so forth. But I see no principle on the basis of which you can say that population ought to be limited. No, absolutely. You get zero population growth. See, no principle for that anywhere.
Or even greater, no reduction.
I don't see a theological principle which say absolutely we ought to not have more people.
Or less.
Yeah. If you read Paul Ehrlich and the VPD people, you find them calling attention to a lot of problems, you know,
right,
and expressing a lot of aesthetic preferences. And then, but that's not...
Now, I see some practical reasons for control of population growth. I see no absolute principle. See, that's what I mean by theological principle. It's good not to have more people.
There's no absolute principle about anything. I mean, I don't quite understand.
Yes,
what
I
you
do
mean.
Think there's an absolute principle. I think there's an absolute principle that there ought to be people. I think God created people and said it is good.
I think
right?
People always
is that,
take care
no,
of
you don't, would you deny that?
I don't know. Yeah, I would deny that. I don't know what you even mean by saying you don't see any principle. Do you mean by that there is no such thing, or do you mean by that you don't personally have such a principle, or do you mean by that you don't see in the foreseeable future a general consensus on any principle? I don't know what you mean by no principle. There are obviously principles around that you may not buy, or there might not be a consensus on, but But there certainly are principles. I don't understand either the connection between theological and absolute. I think that's a very strange combination.
Well, no, I think that what I would say is that creation to me is an absolute principle. That is, that the goodness of creation is an absolute principle. I don't know, I can't establish that empirically, although I experienced the joy and so forth, but it seems to me that's a principle you adopt. And I adopted out of our history, and really from the Bible, I guess, that what is created is good. And I think that applies not only to man, but it applies to all of nature.
And I would say that's not absolute because it's qualified by the story of the fall.
Yeah.
Everything is qualified. There's nothing that's absolute. When you say be fruitful and multiply, that is certainly not an absolute principle or command from God. That is a thing in a time and a place that has to be appropriated in a new time and a new place.
I wonder if we couldn't.
Well, I would say creation. I don't think that sometimes you're going to say, well, it's better for things not to be. That's what you're saying.
So.
Is it? Beg your pardon?
I would think so. What about disease or cancer or something like that, or a deformed human being or someone that's.
Well, all right, what I'm asking you, I guess, is do you really believe that we ought to destroy man?
No, and I really don't see that we've got to that point in this discussion or even the ZBG discussion. I think, you know, that's really absolutely tied to you. I would think that you're talking from a negative principle that's kind of utilitarian, the greatest good for the greatest number with the emphasis on...
No, I'm trying to talk from a positive principle, namely the doctrine of creation.
I wonder if we couldn't get a voice in... useless controversy here. If you think we can use in controlling population, why don't you enunciate it and let's see whether it works or what's wrong. Maybe you've got it and you can help Val out. He doesn't have one. Instead of arguing about the meaning of absolute.
I think that all principles are constructive. All principles are human formulations. They're not absolute,
okay, well,
timeless
thing.
So, for instance, the survival of the human race. That's a principle that can be formulated on the basis of which one could make certain decisions about population growth.
Okay.
Now, I'm not, at the moment, interested, I think, in arguing endlessly for that principle, but that's a principle, and it seems to me Al was saying there is no principle. That's a principle that might be argued.
I think he would accept your principle. I think he would accept that principle and say that is his principle, but it doesn't give you any direction. It doesn't tell you anything at all.
Oh, I think it gives a great deal of direction.
But I don't see how it tells you what to do in any given situation.
There's no straight line from the principle to the tactic. But there are certainly all kinds of extrapolations that one can make from that.
Let me make one extrapolation, Jim. We should just breed like crazy. Preferably every 10 months, every woman should reproduce. This gives us the maximum opportunity to survive.
You take any principle and any extrapolation, and then you have, you know, a conversation. And I would say if you would make that extrapolation from the principle of the survival of the human race, then we'd have an argument on our hands.
I'd agree with this principle as being what I call an absolute principle. That is a beginning general principle which I would not question. It's good for the human race to be.
But then don't you have to qualify it as you get down towards particular? And this is nowhere near the particular, but it would seem to be the ZPG one is that it is good for the human race to survive and at an optimal level culturally.
But I don't know.
I think that's their.
But I don't know which part of the human race.
Yeah.
They usually talk about the North American.
And I don't know who ought to decide and how you decide about any limitation. Now we've made innumerable decisions about limitation of any natural process of reproduction and of the survival process. In other words, we've interfered with a kind of natural, I don't know what natural is exactly, but we've certainly by intent, with purpose, with principle, some kind of principle, interfered with what would be a kind of natural process that goes on in nature outside of it.
And not to spin this up, but just to put one down, because I know there's some medical type people here, but it's been on the basis that, you know, creation is good, that life is good, and we ought to sustain it without thinking of long-term goals, that we have interfered many times with those processes.
But those become ethical and cultural decisions, and not...
They are. But they're more concrete than universal. And I'm not, you know, for the not saying that I think that they're wrong in any particular instance, but it's the cumulative effect of them. In other words, we haven't allowed the natural selective process, or whatever there may or may not be, you know, to take the cripples and the strays out, and we have preserved them. And so we have consciously interfered, and on the basis of your principle, and even of Jim's principle.